Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, I want to get into a little bit of the changing landscape of food fears and phobias. We have a couple of calls, it looks like, to address. So let's go to, and you can reach us 410-662-8780 as we're live today. Sean in Severna Park.
Hi, this is Sean Sunset calling from Severna Park.
Hi, Sean.
I live at WYPR in Baltimore.
That's great. How are you, Sean?
Great.
So you have issues, huh?
Yes. your show really struck a nerve with me today, and I really had to call in. Back around 1977, I was living at Elmendorf Air Force Base in Alaska with my parents, and I was over at a sleepover. I was spending the night with a friend, and in the morning, he served cinnamon rolls. And I reached for the knife, thinking that I was going to spread some butter on top of the cinnamon rolls. But the knife had been used before, and on top of it were some onions.
Ooh.
And I spread that thing across the cinnamon roll, put a bite into it, and
that's kind of dastardly.
Since the sweetness, I mean, it was totally gone. And from that point on, I could not stand onions.
I can't blame you.
Oh my goodness! Did you get past the onion issue?
I did. When I was about 25, I got stationed in the country of Turkey. Hmm. And when you're over there in a Middle East country, you don't want to insult your hosts.
Certainly not.
Whenever they put something in front of you. And I used to go to these little kebab stands on the side of the road. And one of the traditional dishes there is an onion salad. And I don't know how I did it, but I had a liver kebab. And on the side, I had just strictly an onion salad with some kind of a seasoning on top. And I ate that directly, and it was kind of like a revelation. I didn't know what I'd been missing all of that time from an onion.
There you go.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Sean.
Thank you.
Sean's a serious eater. A liver kebab
with
an onion salad.
That's a good change.
You know, that's a good way to get over it.
There
you
go. Exactly.
It's like getting over fear of knives by like having a gun, you know? Let's go to Jay in Pasadena. Jay, how are you?
Oh, very well.
Hi, Jay.
Great. So you have a little food phobia or issue to talk about?
I have a phobia. By the way, just great production, great show. Been loving it.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. We enjoy doing
you.
It.
No, yes. Thank you. Mine, oddly enough, is mayonnaise.
I don't think you're alone.
Yeah.
Not tolerate it.
Did something happen? Was there some, like, you know, terrifying aunt of your childhood or something that had...
It's obviously psychosomatic. I think my mom used to make it in gallon batches, and
Wow. There
was a bad batch. I had a reaction. Ooh. And to this day, if it's in a recipe, I can't use it.
If
I go to restaurants, I have to specify emulsified or mayonnaise-based.
Hmm.
Dressings are an issue, and... It's just extraordinary. But I could have a flounder or a crab imperial as long as it was baked hard.
Mm, wow.
Oh, my.
Yuck.
Totally dry.
That sounds like...
That's terrible.
That's yeah.
All right, well,
I'm assuming there's a great loss in the scheme of things. But
you sound so serious about your fear. I don't want to tell you that you're missing out on anything, Jay.
No. I know I am. I've lost out on many a dinner party, many a menu item, many everything. But I thought you'd get a kick out of that one.
Absolutely.
Maybe
it's so ubiquitous.
Maybe we can get Chef Wolf to put up a fresh mayonnaise that you can make at home recipe on the website. You can make it correctly, have it be nice, and get over it.
Yeah. It's time to move past that one.
Too old.
All right, Jay.
Thank you for the call, Jay.
Thank you.
Let's take the call from Kate in Baltimore. How are you, Kate?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Good.
Good. Hi, Kate.
Good. Hi. Two quick things. One, a phobia that I had was cucumbers. And it was fine if I went to a salad bar. I could opt to get them or not. But prepared salads, I was sort of stuck picking out the cucumbers. Until about 20 years ago, I went to Russia to adopt my daughter. And I was in a fairly impoverished neighborhood, and with a woman who was, you know, my sponsor, and she served cucumbers for every single meal, and not much else. For example, for dinner, we would have a hot dog and cucumbers.
Wow.
And so I was so hungry, I learned to like them.
It's funny what necessity and priority does to... So it sounds like it doesn't fall into the bitter thing, and it doesn't fall into the textural thing. It falls into the intellectual thing, and sounds like prioritization got you past that.
Absolutely.
Good for you.
And then when my daughter was growing up, who is from Russia, I thought she was kind of a picky eater until I took her to a Russian festival. And she ate every food there and kept turning around to me and saying, "Mom, this is so good."
That's great. That's interesting.
So I learned to cook her black peas and things like that, which
that's
she absolutely loved.
Good for you.
It's a great time of the year to buy fresh potatoes at market to make latkes with. And it's a great time of the year for cucumbers. It's a really good season for cucumbers.
And beets, too. So you can.
So that may help you out with your...
feed her well right now.
Absolutely.
That's nice.
Thanks so much,
Kate,
for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
So, and we've got one more call from Maureen and Frederick. And I think you have something that is a fear for more than one or two people. Hello?
Hello? Yes, hi. I'm Maureen from Frederick.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead.
So tell us about liver.
Oh, my God. It's like, to me, it looks like body parts. It looks like something from a horror movie.
No, it's not. It's not like body parts. It's exactly body parts. It is a body part.
It looks too real to me. And it has that blood smell and that blood taste. And it's like, I even avoid it in the freezer section of a supermarket. I won't look at it. I won't touch it. If I go into a restaurant and someone's eating it, I leave. I just have this real fear of it. And I've been a line cook for many, many years. I work for this restaurant, and they used to serve liver and onions, and we hardly ever get ordered for it. And one day, all these old people came in, and I had to serve, like, four orders of it, and I tried to get the other cooks to cook it for me on the grill, and they thought it was hysterically funny. Oh, my God, I got mad. It was like, I told my husband, it's like, if you want to kill me quick, just throw a piece of liver on me. I would die of a heart attack.
Well, you sound pretty motivated, Maureen.
Yeah. I'm not surprised you didn't have a word for that on your phobia word.
I'm sure we can find one.
I have a little bit of a mean streak, Maureen. One of my favorite breakfast dishes my great grandmother would make was liver with sauteed onions, with vinegar, peppers, and a poached egg on it, Ronnie on it.
I know. I'd even chopped liver. Can't do it. Can't do it. Anything. Don't even like looking at it.
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you very much for the call. I hope it helps you get out of your system a little bit.
I don't have to. I'm feeding into it. I don't want to deal with it. Okay. Have a nice day.
Thanks
so much.
You too.
Thank you.
So if you want to call us, we're live 410-662-8780. Let us know about your childhood food issues, food phobias, food fears. And Cindy, maybe give us a little perspective on you. We're talking this morning. You started cooking in 84, right?
I did. And
so, professionally. So what were people averse to in 1984? What was the expectation of the diners and restaurants in 84?
I think that people, there weren't a lot of interesting things available. You never saw rabbit on a menu. You didn't, we started to really start to see game birds on menus.
People still kind of freak out about rabbits.
Right, I'm sure. But it's actually one of the most wonderful things. But, I can understand that someone might be adverse to eating it. But I think really in the 80s, it was sort of, you had this wonderful thing happening in California. Farming was just, they were producing mesclun greens, and Chef Panisse had such an effect. Alice Waters had such an effect on how chefs were cooking. She was training chefs, and all this wonderful California produce and the advent of regional American cooking became the forefront of cooking at that time. And so you've gone from using dried spices that might have even been sitting on the shelf in a kitchen for a couple of years to using a lot of fresh herbs. Moving towards these wonderful like watercress, arugula, mesclun greens, all these things that were so fresh, lots of vegetables, different types of peppers. You didn't just see green peppers, you saw red, yellow, orange peppers. So you have this time where it's just all about fresh produce. And as I said, really getting into American regional cuisine, because at that time, Southern food was really becoming popular.
Kind of rediscovering the American regional cuisine, mm-hmm. because it just, when we talk about things in cans and whatnot, or dried spices and things being shipped and large quantities of food being produced, it makes me think of, well, that's all subject to war effort. And that's all trying for efficiencies and productivity. And And so it's almost like the beginning of post-war food culture, you know, late mm-hmm. 70s, early 80s in, mm-hmm. in California is what you're talking about.
Well, and you also had sort of the slow death of Nouvelle French cuisine at that time in the 80s. So that's one of the reasons why American food started to rise. And then you kind of move into the 90s and you have the influence. Well, in 1979, Jean-Louis Baladin, who also, I think Jean-Louis and Alice Waters are two people that just had a huge influence on what was available to chefs in our country because they both desired, you know, the very best. She had traveled to Europe at the beginning of her adult life and had a just sort of a huge experience being in Paris and realizing how the culture of food there and how people love to eat and live to eat and would commune not, around the table
and it's not
respect
about
for food.
Quantity, and, it's about quality and execution.
And, exactly. And seasonality. Yeah. You know, I was just reading, she has a book, her Chez Panisse has now been open 40 years and she has a great book that has talked about her career. And she was talking about how, you know, of course people ate seasonally because they wanted food that was the best and they wanted food that was the least expensive.
Yeah.
And that's, it's just common sense. So, you know, you have this
that is true efficiency, you know. That's
exactly. Yeah. And so now in the 90s you sort of have wild mushrooms coming around and, you know, the beginning of having fish that we would normally never have eaten in the United States. You know, maybe you are getting dorade in or turbo or getting salmon from even from Alaska. That was something that might not have been readily available. So you have a couple of big purveyors in our country that were really determined to bring in things from Europe that had been unavailable. And again, you know, you have that's because of Jean-Louis. He was a French chef that came to the United States and wanted to work with things that he loved. And then I think as you get into 2000, you have this, you know, this surge in farming and local and interest in local farmers and local markets and sort of the beginning of that and people beginning to understand eating seasonally.
Getting back to the, it's funny, when you say the 90s, it's sort of like, is it the 90s, like, you know, or the 1890s? I mean, it's literally going back to paying attention mm-hmm. to how things were done.
How things used to
be.
Exactly. Right. And, you know, you were talking about the war, and that was really a huge change in what was available, obviously. I mean, you had rationing and everything, and then you had gentlemen going off to fight and not farming the land, and then you had to come back and have all those things come back, which takes years.
I think we have a couple of calls that are queued up. Let's go to Mike in Annapolis.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I had a thing, and it wouldn't fall into your typical phobia, and I don't know if phobia is quite the right term, but I grew up in a working poor home where you had, you know, boiled dinner, you know, it was mm-hmm. sort of meat and potatoes, a couple pounds of ground beef was a luxury to make meat sauce, a lot of spaghetti with tomato sauce. And one of the things I ran into as I grew up was running into foods that were considered luxury foods when I was a kid and not wanting to appear ignorant or appear like a rube. And that was a bigger challenge. You know, you thought of lobster and caviar or truffles or escargot as somehow a delicacy for rich people, and you couldn't get your brain around them.
Yeah, it's part of that cultural thing. I greatly appreciate your call. It's a terrific thing to bring up. A lot of times we'll talk about exotic products or we'll talk about things that people perceive as luxury things, but it comes from an "I want to eat that" perspective. You know, we talk about some serious bottle of wine from a very special place that may be a pricey something, but it's because I want to drink that. It doesn't have to do with the price tag or the things that are associated with it culturally sometimes, the labels associated with it. So over time, what is there something that's helped you kind of get to the other side of that fear? Is there a product that you realize that, oh, this is just good to eat?
No, it was a specific person. And I had the good fortune of going to the U.S. Naval Academy. And when I was there, our food services officer introduced himself. And as it turned out, his wife was a renowned chef in her own right, and she kind of took it as her personal mission to cultivate our palates through her husband.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's great. That's
a bad luck.
What a gift.
I didn't have things that I could never have imagined. Lamb, baked Alaska, duck.
That's great.
Roast duck l'orange, things like that, and Cornish game hens, things that had never graced the table of a plumber in the 70s during a recession.
Sure, yeah. It's understandable.
Commander Neve and his wife opened a lot of doors to me and my palate.
That's fantastic,
yeah,
Mike.
That's really
and
wonderful.
And my confidence in that, too.
Very good. Yeah.
Thank you very much for the
Thank
call.
Thank you, Mike.
That I mean, yeah, I know for me, that's the coolest thing is when you have people coming into the the restaurants and and they're excited about something. They're not certain exactly what it is, but they trust us to introduce them to it.
That's the best part of cooking for me, you know, is having someone eat something they've never had or were afraid of, which is one of the reasons why we're talking about this, and then they love it. That's
why
people, chef could never
that's
be
why
happier.
We cook it. That's why we cook it.
Yeah, to have that happen is great. Yeah. Yeah, it's great to be a part of that.
And one of the craziest, like the look on someone's face the first time you talk to them about putting fresh squid ink in pasta.
Right.
and serving that, and then you put it down, and the noodle is like dark gray.
Right. It doesn't look good, but it is. Yeah.
And yeah, it's marvelous.
And
it has this perfume, from the sea and like mineral flavor to it. And yeah, that's just not an intuitive thing for a lot of folks, but it's really cool to see them turn the corner on it.
Mm-hmm.
We have another call from Jennifer in Baltimore. Jennifer, go ahead.
Hi, Tony. Hi, Cindy. I just have a comment or a question, rather, more than anything.
Sure.
I am a big advocate for eating snails, and I try to get other people to eat them, and they're just so turned off by the idea of it, and it's, it seems really strange to me, especially for someone that would eat, like, mussels or oysters, and it seems to be a texture thing, and they just won't even try it, but if I do get people to try it, then they love it. So I didn't know if you had any suggestions for trying to turn people on to some of these other foods.
I think if maybe they have something, I make a dish that's
that's one of those things is the idea of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I think
it's
if they're
more
kind
than the
of,
texture, it's the idea of it.
Right.
You see it in your garden, and you're like, what in
oh,
the
yeah,
world?
Oh, yeah, why would we
yeah.
eat that? Right, exactly. But if you eat them in
Don't
a way—
Don't eat the ones in your garden, by the way.
I sauté butter poached garlic and shallots and add the snails, deglaze with a little bit of red burgundy, and add chicken and veal stock reduction. And a little bit of mushrooms and maybe bacon. Okay, that's not the most apparent way to eat an escargot. So, and then we serve it in puff pastry. So maybe an introduction to escargot where it's not just escargot and butter where it's quite obvious what they look like and the texture is very apparent that
or
way.
Or it's a part of a dish.
Yeah, so if it's a part of a dish, maybe that's a better
it
way
has
to
another strong
capture
flavor,
them and
strong flavor
get them
partner
to
like
enjoy
bacon
it.
Or something.
Yeah, snails are amazing.
They have it. An email that has an entertaining story from Laurie in Severn, Maryland. It's a fear of potato salad. So when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, we'll be taking your calls, 410-662-8780, and we're going to deal with Laurie's fear of potato salad story.